I'm Marian McPartland. Today on Piano Jazz, we go into our archives for a 1985 program when Ahmad Jamal was my guest, a major force in jazz. So join me now for this very special Piano Jazz.
You know, Ahmad, I've been looking forward to this for so long. I've been doing this show now for about 4 years, I think, and I've really thought a lot about having you be my guest. And
I'm so just intimidating, though. I can't play now.
Oh, now don't. You're going to start right off with me. You're just going to start with me because, you know, you and I go back a few years.
It's just great seeing you again, too.
It's great seeing you, and I still have this picture, mental picture of you at the London House with your trio, and I think that probably was the main trio with Vernelle Fournier.
I was just going to ask you who was working. Well, of course,
Israel Crosby.
Vernelle was there, and Israel, bless his heart.
Well, I can't wait to hear you play. It's been so long, so to hear you live, so please play something for me. What'll it be?
I'd love to do a thing I did in Spain. In fact, I wrote it in Spain, and it's called Spain.
What is it, like your impressions of the countryside?
Sort of. It was called something else, and I decided to change it to Spain.
Well, please, play it for me. That piece has a real, like a brooding quality about it, as if it was done on a hot, sunny afternoon where everything was still and there's a little dust, a kind of dusty atmosphere. That's a beautiful piece.
Thank you. And
I can see you've not been letting time go wasting and writing some new pieces.
I've been doing a bit of writing lately, Marian. I don't have as much time as I would like to spend writing, but once in a while I can manage to get to the old manuscript.
Well, and to see something written out so beautifully, I mean, I haven't seen the copy of that one, but the one you gave me without you, that's, I should certainly have no excuse for not playing that, because it's so beautifully written out.
I certainly hope you will.
I'm going to. But, you know, I'm going to ask you a couple of things. When I first met you in Chicago, at the London House, were you living in Chicago then? Had you come there from Pittsburgh? Or was that one of your first engagements?
I had went to Chicago. I think I left Pittsburgh, went to Chicago in 1948. I had been traveling before that with the George Hudson Orchestra, Marion. And I went back home between 47 and 48, and I went to Chicago. And I stayed there until 1960.
Boy, the London House was sort of your home base, that and the Pershing.
London House, I used to work there as an intermission group. And I left the London House, went to New York, played the Embers for a while, then went back and became an artist in residence at the Pershing Lounge.
Yeah, I remember that. In fact, you recorded there.
Yes, I did.
Several. I know that there must be more than one of those at the Pershing albums.
Yeah, we had an old Steinway that was built in 1890, as a matter of fact, that we recorded on there.
I remember that piano. I was out there a few times.
It came off very well.
Yeah, I hate to sort of get into that nostalgic bag, but thinking about all those times and the music, the way it was played then, and the way you sounded from the first time I heard you, it was, you know, those real exciting times for me. I hadn't been over here too long from England, and I was just digging everything.
They were good times. I can still see Billie Holiday with her little dog she used to bring in the Pershing.
The gardenia.
Yeah, I can see it just as well as it was yesterday.
Did she work there, or did she just come out there?
She was staying in the hotel. She was just coming in to see me. She was working out of town, but she was passing through at the time.
First time I met Billy was at the Blue Note. And I think you were in town, too, but that we played together. I mean, that's opposite Billy, rather. So, you know, that's an experience. Frank Holstein's place. One of the great clubs, wasn't it?
It certainly was.
Well, you know, so was the Embers, except that was somewhat a noisy place.
A bit noisy.
For people like you and me.
A bit noisy.
Well, we don't have to worry about there being any noise here today, Ahmed Jamal, so will you go ahead and play?
Sure, here's a tune by...
by you.
Not Johnny Mandel, but by me, that's right. I was going to say by Johnny Mandel, but that's later on. That I had the pleasure of writing maybe a month or two ago. Hopefully Stevie Wonder's going to do the lyrics to this. Call Without You.
That would be nice.
Thank you.
Oh, that's such a beautiful tune. If Stevie Wonder puts a lyric to that, you're going to have a hit on your hands.
I might be able to retire, huh? At long last.
Oh, you don't want to do that. Somebody that plays those gorgeous harmonies, you wouldn't ever want to retire. That would be silly.
Well, we're going to send a tape to Steve, as a matter of fact, tonight to listen to it, and we hope he'll like it well enough to do lyrics. We were together in New Orleans not too long ago.
Well,
I was doing the Fairmont down there, so we spent a few hours together. He was trying to convince me to probe into the drum synthesizer. He wanted me to get a machine and explore some rhythms.
And what did you decide?
I haven't gotten it yet, Mary.
Well, I'm sort of on the fence about that. You know, I still think a real live drummer is the best there is.
A real live drummer is a real thing.
Yes, you've had some of the best. Thinking of Fern Ellis,
I've been very fortunate. I've had some great drummers, and it's very interesting. Most of the great drummers, or a lot of the great drummers, I can't say most because the drummers come from everywhere, but certainly a lot of them come from New Orleans. I have one now, Herlin Riley, and Vernell Fournier, who's also from New Orleans. Both of them, Vernell Fournier, without a doubt, is one of the world's greatest drummers, no question about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I would say so. What's the name of the one you have now?
Herlin Riley.
Herlin Riley.
He was working with Al Hurt some time ago now, and then he went out with a Broadway show One More Time. He was in London for 6 months with that. Now he's back with me.
And who's on
bass?
But
he's also from New Orleans. I'm using a young man that was talking about one of your songs the other day. I guess it was Ambiance.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
And James can make a remarkable bassist, Marilyn. He's originally from Washington, D.C. He's been with the West Point Army Band, and he's just a great bassist. And I have guitars also working with me now.
I know everybody would love to hear one of your big hits that you did years ago, but first...
Well, I'm certainly hoping you'll play one of those things for me. I'd love to hear you play Poinciana later on
in the program. Well, of course, it would be rather shameless of me to do that, but... I'll just sort of work in easy and do this one that you wanted to hear by Harold Arlen, Ill Wind.
I'd love to hear it. You know the story I told you about that.
Tell me.
Why I wanted to hear it. You know, the last time I heard this perform, I was at the Hickory House, and I had the enviable pleasure of listening to Marilyn Williams play it that night, Marion. And I would love to hear you do it.
Of course, you just put me on the spot when you said that, because Mary Lou was somebody I really adored and respected and admired. And actually, I guess I knew her pretty well. And she was a big influence on me. And, well, anyway, I won't talk about that. See what I can do with this. Ill Wind by Harold Arlen. And here goes.
Thank you.
You make me nervous.
It's just great.
Playing for you is...
It's great, Marion.
Well, it's a tune I've always liked. I don't know. You must play all
Where
those...
Where do you get all those magnificent harmonies from?
I'm listening to people like you. Thinking, ooh, that would be...
listening to yourself.
No, sometimes I guess it's a good idea to listen to oneself, but, I mean, for instance, you, like, after you've made a record, do you go back and listen to it and take it apart and say, oh, I should have done this, or I should have done that?
I listen to it so much in the production stages, as you know.
Yeah.
That the only time I listen afterward is when I'm doing an interview at a station. They happen to have the record there, hopefully. But I very rarely continue listening because I've done so much listening prior to release time. And I've, in fact, case in point would be the historic thing we did at the Pershing with Israel and Vernell. We did 43 tracks that night at the Pershing, and I only used 8. So that involved a lot of editing, a lot of listening. I continued to listen to that quite a bit afterward. That was a rarity, but it was played so much, and I guess that's the reason why I was doing a... I was at the peak of the interviews at that time. I was doing a lot of interviews.
Well, a lot was happening with you at that. I don't know which one, whether you're referring to, but not for me. I don't know which one came first.
628, yes.
That was such a huge hit.
It was.
My goodness.
It was on the charts for 108 weeks. And we were getting airtime that was unheard of because, of course, Point Sound was 7 minutes and 35 seconds. But to get back to the point, that's one of the rare times that I listened a lot after it was released. Most of the time, all my listening is done prior to release, and that's it.
I guess it's the same with me, too, because after you've done it, you sort of, at least I sort of think, well, that's it, I've done that.
Yeah, and you go on to the next thing.
You go on to the next one.
And in fact, I was asked a few days ago, we were doing a seminar in Kansas City at the university there. And a young man asked me what is my favorite product, my favorite LP or recording, whatever. And I said, the next one.
Well, I guess that's, most of us do think that way. But it's still in all, if you had to, I guess I'll put you on the spot, but if you had to pick one that isn't the next one, I mean, wouldn't you be pretty satisfied with some of those things you did?
The most put together one, or the one I think that was close to artistic perfection as much as I can get in my own person, would be 628, the one at the Pershing.
Well, you know,
I made one mistake there, though. I didn't put one of my songs on that album. I did a thing by Dizzy Gillespie. I did George Gershwin's, but not for me, and some others, but I did not do any of my own compositions. I was criticized severely for that.
Well, I guess you knew better after that. That it taught you in a hurry. Well, talking about but not for me. You know, as you say, you've heard it so much, but I know everybody would love to hear you do it.
Very rarely play it. And I would only do it for you. I tell you, we played it so many times. In fact, I'm doing 90% of my own compositions now. Because I find my things much easier to play than the compositions of others, and I guess it was the reverse before. But for you, I'm going to do it.
Well, we can do it as a duet. I can get in there and put in my own 10 cents.
I love it.
If you'd like.
I love that supportive role that you do so well for this.
I don't know if it's supportive or destructive.
Thank you.
You know, that's still a great version. I mean, it's a different from the record, but...
Never played it that way in my life.
Well, you couldn't. It's a whole different
thing. How many lessons I'm learning today. Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was for me, too. What else? Oh, I know, coming up, something I'm dying to hear you play. Now, you were telling me before that you do a lot of tunes by Johnny Mandel, and you've picked one that is not really what I'd call a run-of-the-mill, or none of his tunes are run-of-the-mill, but I mean tunes that are played a lot, like Shadow of Your Smile.
I do a lot of things. I'll tell you also, you know, when we first went with Fox, 20th Century Fox Records, that is, we were called to perform some of the soundtrack for the reissue of the movie MASH, rather. And that's also one of Johnny Mandel's claims of fame.
I love that tune. That's fun to play on, actually.
And we did some of that soundtrack, which was Johnny Mandel's music, or is. And we also did Time for Love and some other mm-hmm. things that I enjoy doing. So he's one of my favorite writers.
But this one you're going to play, Close Enough for Love, you know, I didn't hear that for quite a while. I think I heard Peggy Lee sing it.
You were going to play a bit of The Shining Sea for me.
My hand just hovered over the piano for a second. I want to hear you do Close Enough for Love, please. You have such a intense feeling, Ahmet Jamal, in all those ballads, especially numbers like the minor ballad seems to really suit your temperament.
I like doing ballads. They're difficult to play, and I think it requires years of living, really, to read them properly.
Well, that's probably true, because especially when you know the lyrics to some of these things, and they really seem to fit one's real-life situation.
Are you going through the lyrics as you play?
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. You have to, don't you?
Sure. I mean, I know I've talked about that a lot. I don't, but I think it is something very important. And I sort of see, maybe seize upon a fragment of a lyric that just seems to hit me right. A tune I started to play, I guess, I don't know why I didn't play it before, but hearing Frank Sinatra do Guess I'll Hang My Tears Out to Dry. And there's just a little part of that lyric that sort of went right, stuck right in my heart, you know, and I thought, well, I'm going to start playing that tune. This tune that you suggested that we should play, Polka Dots, The Moonbeams. I love that tune.
That wasn't written yesterday either, was
it? That wasn't written yesterday. And you know, I heard Andre Previn play it at the London House, and he came in like off the road with a trio consisting of Shelley Mann. I'm trying to think who the bass player was. And he hadn't rehearsed or anything. He sat down. And that was one of the tunes he played, and it was so beautiful.
Lester Young used to do this so well, too. I know you heard
what,
Lester.
What, you mean come in with a... and just start playing without rehearsing? And
no, this was one of Lester's great records, Polka Dots and Moonbeams, one of my favorite records by Lester Young.
Well, I guess we can play our own version of Polka Dots.
Want to do it?
Think
fine.
About Lester a little bit.
I'll let you start. You want me to start? You want to start?
I'll start.
I'll let
How
you
about
start.
That?
That'd be great. I've been starting. Thank you.
the pretty changes you put in there. Because, you know, I think I was just one step behind, but you just did a beautiful set of changes on the end there.
Thank you.
Now I'm dying to hear you play another of your things.
It's Firefly.
I haven't heard this on the record.
You know, I don't know if I should do it or not. Maybe I.
Do you want me to coax you?
I should play something easier. I was saying that my things are easier to play, but this is one. Well, let me
no,
just give a little bit.
No, please play it. Firefly. Firefly, that's great. These are great pieces. I'd like to have them all, especially that ballad, Without You. Those, you must sit home and practice a lot, or think of ideas, or play, don't you?
I just signed something for you. What does it say?
Oh, I can't read this. I can't read this, but it's a nice compliment.
You're
going to
make me practice. That's what it says. You're going to make me practice. I don't practice enough. I lost the discipline for practice many, many years ago. And this morning I sat down, I just picked up a book that I had in my library, but I don't know where it is, some of the well-tempered clavichord things by Bach, and I was doing that this morning. I really don't have the time to practice like I should, but I am getting back to the piano much more often or more frequently than I was in the past.
When I started playing professionally, somebody said, do all the practice you can because when you start working steady and going out on the road, you won't have time to practice. And I really haven't practiced the way I used to. I mean, believe it or not, I used to do 8 hours a day when I was a kid.
How much are you doing now?
Seven? Nothing. My father used
Sounds
to say...
Sounds like seven.
My father used to say...
At least seven.
Doesn't she do anything else except play the piano all day?
Well, you know, we did the same thing in Pittsburgh, which is my hometown. I used to practice, and leave the door open, hoping that someone would come along and discover me one of these days. But it never happened. I had to leave home, all of that. In fact, I'm still trying to find someone to discover me, man.
Oh, I seem to think that the door was left open and people came rushing in. But Mary Lou was in Pittsburgh, too, wasn't she?
Mary Lou and myself and Earl Garner, we all went to the same high school.
Oh, no kidding.
Dodo Mamoroso went to the same elementary school, and Dodo is a pianist that's not mentioned enough.
Where is that guy? We want to find him.
I don't know where Dodo is, but, you know, he was on those very early things with Adi Shaw, Summit Ridge Drive. He was playing harpsichord. Dodo was a great... He was on some early things with Charlie Parker as well on Dow.
Yeah, I know he was. He's a fantastic player.
But Billy Strayhorn, I used to sell papers to his family as well. He's from my hometown.
What?
Oh, yes.
That's what... Oh, my goodness.
And, of course, Roy Eldridge is from there, and Earl Hines, and Ray Brown.
That's a very distinguished
Blakey,
town.
Billy Eckstein.
Oh, yes. Goodness. All those people.
George Benson, Stanley Turrentine.
I don't know what to say. I'm bowled over by everything that's happening. And now I have to, since I have tried my best to get you to play Poinciana.
No, this is my treat.
And you refuse. This
is my treat.
I'm going to have to. But you
this
know
is,
what?
This is certainly worth coming in from Massachusetts for, believe me.
You know what I wish you'd do? You started to play a little bit of Poinciana, and you played a certain kind of an intro. Lead me in, you know, just sort of set me rolling on this thing.
I'll play a few of my old lines for you. Okay?
All right, whatever. Thank you. You know, it would have been shameful if I would have just played that by myself.
I know I wasn't supposed to play all through that.
Oh, but
That was shameful for me to do that. I couldn't resist it, though.
That's a very memorable tune. It's a tune that one always thinks of you when you think of that.
We still do it. In fact, it's very difficult not to do it. And every time it's a new challenge. It's a lot of fun still to play it.
I'll bet it is. But do you find that audiences have changed? Do very young people come in who might not be as familiar with that part of the repertoire as we are? Is that a new thing for them to hear that tune?
Very rarely. Most of the young people come in and are quite familiar with it. I don't know if it's by way of their parents or what, but they, interestingly enough, they know it.
Well, I think that's great. As a matter of fact, somebody said to me, and I think it's true, that jazz brings together generations more than other kinds of music, which seems to separate the generations. I mean, jazz really, like the parents love it and they introduce it to the kids and the kids start liking it. I've got people come around that I used to know in the Hickory House when they were kids and then they got married and...
I run into that often, too. I know
exactly
what you're
talking about. Isn't that kind of fun?
It's very, very interesting. It's sort of a unifying force, isn't it?
A unifying force. See, you said it so much better. I need somebody erudite around here. That's the thing. Hey, let's do another duet. Waste me one more time.
John Burks. I was just with John Burks about 7 weeks ago. Wouldn't you? And I haven't done this in years either. And you floored me when you were playing bits and pieces of it earlier today.
Well,
let's
just
try and do it. I don't know.
Wouldn't you? Well, it has for me too. Yeah. So we can both cop out.
I'd love to do it.
We can do is nothing can go wrong.
You want me to lead in?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Well, I squeaked by with that one, Ahmet, and I thank you for coming and spending the afternoon.
It's been a pleasure being with you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland. Her guest has been Ahmet Jamal in a favorite program from our archives, originally airing in 1985.